It is Betting Across America here on VSiN. I'm Brian Noah alongside James Salinas joining us here in Denver. By the way, I got to tell you, James, before we go any further with our budding friendship here and a radio partnership / TV partnership, is I'm rooting against the Broncos. I know you're in Bronco territory over there, but I got to hit you with the truth. I'm not going to go the cryptic route like I'm Aaron Rodgers or Devontae Adams. I'm not going to be combative here, but I'm just going to tell you the truth. I'm rooting against the Broncos because I hated their plan at quarterback, which was to not draft a quarterback at 9th overall, go with the corner in Patrick Surtain, and now I hear this all the time. They might get Aaron Rodgers. I'm hoping and I'm pleading with the football gods to not get Aaron Rodgers over there in Denver. They shouldn't be rewarded for being passive when it comes to drafting a quarterback. What are your thoughts on Denver and their potential pursuit of Aaron Rodgers?
Brian, let's start here first. That you don't like, or you're rooting against the Broncos, I don't care. I'm here. Here's to be flat. I'm going to be flat out honest with you. I have no allegiance to any team. I gave up being a fan when I reached the age of reason, probably when I started betting on sports when I turned 15 in high school, my freshman year back in the day. I literally grew up right across. I was just down the street from Mile High Stadium as a kid growing up. And ultimately, if you want to think about being a fan, I was not a fan of the Broncos because of all the mess that would happen in our front yard when I was a kid, all this tailgating, all kinds of things that we can't discuss on a family betting show here this early in the morning. But I'm not a fan of any team. I'm a fan of whoever I'm betting on. And in this case here, whether if I'm betting on the Broncos, they're my best team this week. If I'm betting against them, yeah, that's where my allegiance goes. So as far as the Broncos are concerned, if they're able to land Aaron Rodgers, you talked about what they did in the draft. I think what they did, they needed to shore up the cornerback position, and they did that not only through the draft but in the offseason. So I think from the Broncos' standpoint going into the season, this defense, this is what Vic Fangio wants. When he builds his defense, he starts from the back end in. A lot of times you talk about defensive line, start in and go backwards. He starts on the back end and comes forward, and I think that's where that secondary for the Denver Broncos is going to be very competitive this year. It's going to keep the Broncos in so many games from a competitive standpoint. Now, what does that look like offensively if it's Teddy Bridgewater, which I suspect it will be? Drew Locke was just there's some other things here off the field with Drew Locke and mom getting involved with social media. Just I'm not quite sure if that's the leader that they're thinking, and that's why they made the move with Bridgewater. But if it ends up being Aaron Rodgers, for me, I'm not a fan. I don't care if they win the Super Bowl. I don't care if they go 0-6 or 0-17 this season, unless I'm cashing tickets on them. So from that standpoint here, it is all business for me when it comes to Denver Broncos down the street from me or anybody else. I'm not a fan of any teams. I'm a fan of cashing tickets.
I like it. I have to tell you a brief story. So I grew up in South Bend, Indiana, so I bleed Irish football. That's just me. And one year, Notre Dame wasn't any good, and I bet on USC. And it was the worst feeling ever. And I won. I got it right. But I was so conflicted with, like, everything in me is like root for the Irish, but they weren't any good and it wasn't going to help them anyway. And I had to root for USC, so I won my bet. Can you remember if it was a game? How far back do you have to go where you made the progression from I'm rooting for my dollars instead of my team that I'm betting against here?
Well, let me put it this way. When I was in high school back in the 80s, I'll date myself, I just joined the 50 Club, the Denver Broncos were in the Super Bowl 3 out of the 4 years I was in high school. And it was genius because everybody, rah, 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 the Denver Broncos are going to win. You bet. I'll give you more. I was giving out 13.5 points for, because I did my own little thing back in the day. We were talking in school. That I think of that San Francisco game in particular that they got throttled 55-10. I was giving folks, they didn't even understand the spread. Yeah, I'll give you 2 touchdowns. That means the Broncos didn't even have to win. I'll give you 2 touchdowns. That was glorious time back then because I was collecting hand over fist with the Broncos being in the Super Bowl 3 out of my 4 years in high school. So it was probably there that first Super Bowl. I think it was Super Bowl 21 when they played the Giants and Phil Sims, mm-hmm. and it just got completely run over. So maybe back when I was 15, 16 years old. Sorry to be so jaded when it comes to fandom, but I'm all about, again, it's all business for me when we're talking sports betting.
I love that. Profiting off of the Broncos getting dusted in numerous Super Bowls. That is a beautiful thing right there. It is Betting Across America here on VSiN. I'm Brian Noe alongside James Salinas here with you. And we got a lot of lines to go through on betting across America. Now, James, I'm curious, where do you stand? We've got all the week one lines here. Britton, who's producing this show and doing a fine job, he's out of the gate strongly today on a Saturday. I'm going to beat up on him for betting on Team Nigeria, but that comes down the road. Let's start with the good. He's got all the week one betting lines here, some games of interest. How do you approach this? We're in late July. Do you look to get in on some of these lines anticipating some movement, or are you a little bit more of a wait-and-see type guy?
I'm the latter there, Brian. I'm a wait-and-see type guy. We know injuries, for one. I think that's the biggest piece when we're talking about the NFL. We know how volatile it is and fluid it is when it comes to player injuries. We just saw Cam Akers go down for the season for the Rams. More, we see now Michael Thomas having late-season surgery. I think there's more to that than just being injured there and his timing of when he had that surgery. There's definitely a disconnect there between Michael Thomas and the New Orleans Saints front office. But injuries play such a factor into this. So I think when we're talking about getting involved now, in a sense, it's not a future bet, but it is a future bet. We're talking, what, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away before we actually start the NFL season. I just think there's so much going on when it comes to injuries. And now thinking about lessons learned from last year, betting on football and betting on the NFL, Brian, during the pandemic, we saw so many factors coming in with players availability. Guys being, I just think of the scenario that happened again right down the street from me here at Mile High Stadium with the Broncos against the Saints and their quarterback situation that happened, where the quarterback crew, they weren't allowed to play in that football game, and they ultimately had to pull in one of the receivers to play quarterback. Just a complete debacle. So I think, and we're not completely on the other side of this pandemic. We've heard that already. We saw the memo come down from the NFL when it comes to, hey, if you guys are, you might have to forfeit a game if you have issues with in your locker room when it comes to COVID-19. So for me, yeah, I'm going to tread very lightly when it comes to any futures market and then looking at week one lines. I think what's interesting, and we do the look-ahead lines, and some books can do it all season. They'll put out 17 weeks worth of look-ahead lines for games. I think when we're talking about week one, that's where I talked about earlier when we were on the pregame show, Brian, of I take a wait-to-see approach, and or I'm looking to fade any teams that have transition, whether it's transition through the roster, transition at quarterback, maybe offensive line. There's some big roster moves that happen in the offseason, and or coaching staffs. And coaching staffs having to come in and take over a new team, sometimes those things take some time for the coaches to get to know their players, as well as for these new teammates to kind of gel offensively, defensively, what have you. So really tread lightly when it comes to getting involved in the future market. And in this case here for week one lines, something that there's plenty to discuss there. But for me, getting involved and putting money out there, I typically don't do that.
I'm with you. I'm more of a wait and see guy. I want to know exactly what the picture is that I'm going to be betting on. Unless there's something that's, it's case by case. If there's something that's a little bit different, I might get down, but for the most part, I like to wait until we're close to game time. So I would agree with you on that. I think it's interesting, too. You talk about the possibility of games being forfeited. I'll believe it if I see it, and I don't think we will. Just when you think about this, common sense will tell you they played every single game last year during the heart of the pandemic, and now we've got numerous teams that have reached that 85% threshold of getting vaccinated. And look, we know that doesn't guarantee that you will not contract COVID, but it gives you a much better chance of either not contracting it or getting right back to playing if you test negative twice over the next 24 hours and you're asymptomatic. So I don't think they're going to miss any games this year, but I do think that the players that are dead set against getting vaccinated, I think there's a likelihood that some of those guys will miss games. So if we're talking about DeAndre Hopkins and any of his player props, I'm not looking to the over, because anybody who's unvaccinated who tests positive, you're in isolation for 10 days. That could be two games right there, and that could be the difference between D-Hop going over or under his season total.
Absolutely, Brian. And I'm typically one that, from my betting standpoint, I'm usually looking at underdogs first. I'm betting against human achievement a lot of times. So when we're talking about player prop markets like that, usually I'm looking to see where can I find some value in going under player props. And in this case here, now you add another wrinkle to it with guys, whether they're unvaccinated or feeling like they, I mean, we've heard some interesting things coming out of DeAndre Hopkins over the last couple of days. Say, well, I'm not even sure where my place in the NFL is at this point in my career. I got plenty of years left ahead of me. Yeah, that doesn't inspire you to want to get out there and look at his player prop market to bet over on any of his totals, whether it's receiving yards, touchdowns, receiving, those types of things, looking more so to the under. But then also have to consider, you talked about, yeah, we didn't have any cancellations of games and nothing that was forfeited. Obviously, that wasn't in the discussion last year, but we did have some games moved around. So we had Tuesday games last year. We had Wednesday games last year, and it really impacted not only throwing guys off. I mean, the NFL, these guys are creatures of habit when it comes to routine of what it looks like from after post-game day on a Sunday to what Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, et cetera, looks like during the week. And you throw a wrench into that, I think that's impactful. So I think those are some of the things to take into account, too, is the fact that if you have some games moved around, I think about the Pittsburgh Steelers, for that matter, they had schedules moved around. They played a Wednesday game against Baltimore. They also had their bye week moved up into week four. And I think we saw that because of some of those schedule changes, it didn't impact them early in the season. We saw what a great run they got off to, what a start they had. I think 11-0, 12-0 start, whatever the Steelers were. But how did that end up playing out? Because they didn't have that, because the bye week was so early. I think scheduling for me, we talk about looking at betting the NFL, scheduling spots for me from week to week in the National Football League is definitely a big key, Brian, for my handicap.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that Wednesday game between the Ravens and Steelers, right? Like, the NFL numerous times moved heaven and earth to get the games in. So they remind me of a parent that threatens but doesn't follow through. The NFL's like, we might have to forfeit games over here and game checks, and they're going to be costing themselves money if they do that, which they're not in the business of doing. So if you're putting the over-under on games that are forfeited at 0.5, I'm betting the under this year. What would you say about that, James?
I think so, and I think we're hearing this collectively. Each team is going to approach this differently, I think, as how they're going to, when we're talking about accountability within their locker room for players and where they put themselves out there, subject themselves to. Are they putting themselves in places of risk? We heard some strong words out of Bruce Arians with the Tampa Bay Bucks the other day, talking about, we will, if you're unvaccinated and you're putting yourself in positions where you might not only put yourself but our team at risk, we're going to fine you immediately, no questions asked. So I think every team is going to approach it to a certain extent. We've heard, like we talked about with Bruce Arians, we know what the identity of that team is right there with Tom Brady at the leadership position at the quarterback spot, but also Arians, clearly no nonsense there. Each team's going to approach that differently. So I think those are things that you have to think about too, just the internal structure of each team when it comes to the front office, when it filters down to the head coach. Who's really the guy in charge? Who is really the folks that are in charge? Who are the leaders of those teams? And what does accountability look like? Because chemistry within an NFL locker room, Brian, it's so, not forget about, we know it's fluid for one, but it's always very fragile, and things can set folks off. And we're getting divisiveness here when we're talking about whether it's the political climate and certain things that go on within locker rooms. We're hearing things with the Bills when it comes to vaccination, some folks against it and other folks for it. This might be something that we have to consider. Does it postpone a game or does it forfeit a game? Maybe not. But when it comes to thinking about from a week-to-week basis, how galvanized is this team? Where is this locker room currently sit as far as chemistry is concerned? Those are all factors that have to play into. You can't find it in a spreadsheet, Brian, but these are things that the intangibles that are important when we're talking about betting on NFL football.
It's a great point by you. There's no doubt. I'm Brian, though. He's James Salinas. This is Betting Across America on VSiN. I want to circle back to a name you mentioned, Michael Thomas. Now, it's the second Scottie Pippen reference today, because we initially had that with the cryptic IG stories with Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, where they posted a picture of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen fist bumping one another. I look at Michael Thomas, I would relate it to Scottie Pippen this way. When we were watching The Last Dance, remember Michael Jordan saying, oh yeah, like Scottie was immature about his injury. He didn't get the surgery right away. And are we seeing history repeat itself? Scotty on The Last Dance was like, yeah, I didn't like my contract situation, so I'm like, I'm not going to let it screw up my summer, and I'll use some of the season to rehab. What is your read on Michael Thomas having all these ankle injuries last season and then having ankle surgery in June and possibly going to miss the beginning of the season, maybe as many as 5 games. Who knows?
Yeah, even longer potentially. Yeah, I think it goes beyond just the injury that he has, to your point. And those are the inner workings when it comes to how, again, thinking about whether it's a player and or a collective unit, offensive line, defensive line, you name it. Guys are in their little cliques within an NFL locker room. And then you think about a player like Michael Thomas, and where is he at now that he doesn't have Drew Brees? How much of a, as well as he's played throughout his career there in New Orleans for Michael Thomas, now not having Drew Brees there, was that a big product of how successful he was? Absolutely it was. But now where they're going at going forward, you just have disconnects between players. You're talking about contracts, getting contracts, extensions. So many factors have to play into thinking about where is a divided locker room, whether it's between players within the locker room or players when it comes to the front office. We were talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers back an hour ago with the pregame show. Those things matter, and those are things that I don't want to get involved with when it's looking at backing a team. Leadership is really important, and who are the leaders within that locker room, whether it be the players and or the coaches, to filter through all those things to keep teams together, because a divided locker room, Brian, is not a team where I want to get involved with. A lot of times that's some part of the handicap to look at. If this is a divided locker room and or we have certain players that are disgruntled, how does that impact their play on the field? I think it's very impactful as far as the effort and the concentration and the focus from week to week in the NFL. It's so volatile betting on the NFL. I do it just week to week. We talked about getting involved with the futures. I typically don't get involved with a lot of futures because of that. And I think here, to your point with Michael Thomas, where is his head right now? His head is not wanting to be on the field, having that surgery the way that he did so late in the offseason. Yeah, does he, you talk about maybe out 5, 4, 5, 6 weeks? I wonder if it's going to even last even longer than that.
It very well could. We've got a couple of minutes. We can do a hybrid here, where we can talk some Team USA Olympic basketball, and I can also get out my public service announcement to not be like our producer, Britton, who is betting on Team Nigeria. I did an impassioned plea a couple of days ago when I was filling in on the nightcap, and Britton didn't take my advice. You're just throwing your money. You're like, adios, $10. Adios, $20. You're just taking a BIC out and setting it on fire if you're taking Nigeria to win gold. I know it's not a sexy price. It's minus 350 or minus 320, depending on where you get it, for Team USA. But do you honestly see anybody winning gold other than Team USA when it comes to Olympic basketball?
I don't think so, but that doesn't mean that getting beyond the futures market here in the Olympics for Team USA. Yeah, as far as the talent goes, yeah, collection of great talent on the team, although we've seen a lot of roster moves within the last few weeks. Bradley Beal having to come back home and not being a part of the team. And you mentioned earlier about the folks that were just in the NBA Finals. They were just hanging in Milwaukee just a few days ago when you're talking about Booker, Middleton, and Holiday. Well, maybe there's still a little hangover. Maybe Booker's still kind of hung over from how poorly he played in Game 6, and Holiday and Middleton, they may still need a little time to dry out from those celebrations that you know are going down out there in Milwaukee. But thinking about the international game, I think that's the interesting point here. When you're playing international teams, I know they break down how many of these players currently with these different teams, whether it's Nigeria or France, who the USA team plays tomorrow morning, that there is NBA talent and experience out there. But I think the bigger piece for me to consider, if I'm going to be betting game to game right now, and I'm looking at the price right now for USA in this game, the line right now is sitting at 12.5 over France. Well, France has some NBA talent and experience there. They also have experience playing the international game, and that's the difference. We know it's a shorter game. The quarters are 10 minutes, not 12, so it's a 40-minute game, and it's a more physical game. The hand checking is allowed. They let you bang in the paint some more, and you think about the NBA players and especially the ones that are on this currently constructed roster for USA basketball, not a lot of guys that really love to play through contact. And I think that's going to be something that they're going to have to adapt to coming over and playing the international style of basketball in the Olympics. So I'm not going to get in front of the USA and say, no, they can't win the gold. I suspect that they will. The talent will play out as the Olympic Games progress. But make mine right now, looking at France versus USA. USA is a 12.5-point favorite. Brian, this is not the dream team that's rolling into this game. This is a mismatch of players, and they're going to have to learn how to play the international game on the fly. I'm interested in France and probably taking that big number plus 12.5.
I can just hear Rick Pitino in my head talking about the dream team of 92. Michael Jordan ain't walking through that door. And Magic Johnson's not walking through that door. And Larry Bird's, and he could just go on and on and on naming legendary players. But, yeah, it's a different day and age right now for Team USA Hoops. Good stuff. Okay, coming up next, I want to get to a couple of things here. One, what is your juice breaking point? I want to dive into that question because I find that to be pretty interesting. And also, what's the deal here with Texas and Oklahoma? It looks like just a matter of when, not if, they bolt from the Big 12 to go to the SEC. What's the possible ripple effect, not just with those two conferences, but the overall landscape of college football? So we'll dive into that as well. It's Betting Across America. I'm Brian Ngo. He's James Salinas. It's VSiN. It's Betting Across America presented by BetMGM. I'm Brian Ngo. He's James Salinas. And if we dive into this Texas-Oklahoma thing here, so they've had conversations behind the Big 12's back for 6 months, and the Big 12 is like, what is going on here? We knew nothing of this. So both Texas and Oklahoma are looking to jump ship and go to the SEC. They would have to give an 18-month heads up to the Big 12 that, hey, we are leaving you, and best of luck with your conference that's in shambles, if that indeed happens. I guess let's start with this. First off, I know it's to make more money, but it doesn't make sense to me, James. The SEC, we know Bama is reigning supreme right now, and I think Nick Saban's going to be there for the better part of the next decade. Even if you get beyond Nick Saban and you're thinking about the next era of SEC football, it's still an incredibly deep conference, NFL talent galore. I just think Oklahoma and Texas, you're better off being a bigger fish in a smaller pond in the Big 12 instead of a smaller fish in a big pond in the SEC. So what do you make of them most likely jumping ship to the SEC for starters?
You said it to begin. It's all about money. So much for the sanctity of the student athlete and the purity of amateur sports when it comes to college football, or any colleges for that matter. We know it's big business. We're a billion-dollar industry when it comes to the college football playoff, the amount of money and revenue that's generated through that, how the money comes back to programs, to schools. It is what it is. That we have to be mindful and really take it for what that's worth when it comes to, it's a business. And for me as a sports bettor, that's how I treat these things. I don't have an allegiance. I told you, I don't have an allegiance to the Denver Broncos. I don't have an allegiance to any team, any program when it comes to college sports. I don't care. Whoever's going to cover, that's my team for that particular game. But I think here, for those teams to jump ship now, I mean, it's chasing the dollars. It's chasing the exposure. And we talk about recruiting. And I wonder this to this point, Brian, now that players have the ability to capitalize on their likeness and endorsements, what, whatever that looks like, and without getting into too detailed of what that's going to look like for said individual player. I mean, that's the other piece of this too when it comes to recruiting. And recruiting now is not just going to be about going to said particular school. It's going to be for these star players, these terrific recruits, where can I get the most bang for my buck? Where am I going to get the most exposure? Where am I going to be on national TV week in and week out, not only for my exposure on the field, but also off the field? And how can I capitalize on this new environment when it comes to college football for these young student athletes? I think that's a big piece going forward. But Southeast Conference, I don't know, it's, I guess, Oklahoma. We're going to have to call it something else. Now you're going to – what happens to the rest of the conference, Brian? What happens to the rest of these teams within the Big 12 Conference when it comes to football? I think Big 12 right now, it's been for a number of years, it's been all about the basketball when it comes to the powerhouses in college basketball in the Big 12. It's really an afterthought for college football, and I think that's probably where Oklahoma and Texas are seeing that, because they really haven't been, especially Texas, hasn't been relevant and been a big contender as far as the national championship picture is concerned.
Yeah, I would compare it to Notre Dame, just as a, you know, take another team, for instance. Notre Dame is printing money right now. Could they print more money if they join the SEC? Yeah, probably. Is that better for them? No, not at all. They're way down in the pecking order if that's what they did, and I think it's the same thing with Texas. I also think this, too, the college football landscape. I think we don't know where we're headed. Are we headed toward 16-team super conferences? Is this going to be one big clump of Power Five teams? And I think when it comes to dating, you define the relationship. It's important. It's like, are we exclusive? Are we just doing insanity workouts and we're buddies? You're like, what are we doing here exactly? And I think as a college football fan, the relationship hasn't been defined. Like, where are we headed? And that's an unanswerable question at this stage.
I don't know where it's headed, but I know well, I guess we can say this, Brian. We know it's headed to TV contracts, bigger exposure. We're talked about in a few years being able to expand the college football playoffs and what that's going to do and generate more revenue for all that are involved in that. It's business. I think we have to look at it from a business standpoint. I definitely do as a sports bettor with any of these sports. And when it comes to betting on college football, I don't care what conference you're in. Put the two teams together, put the postal lines up, and I'll decide whether I want to bet into it or not.
Amen to that. All right, coming up next, what is your juice breaking point? And also baseball betting lines. We'll see if there's any value that we can get in on with today's slate of games. Keep it locked right here. Betting Across America. I'm Brian Noe. He's James Salinas here on VSiN. VSiN football betting guides are coming soon, and there is no better way to prepare for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles on every team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. Each guide is only $20, and discounts are available when you buy both. Now is the time to reserve your copy or sign up for VSiN All Access and get everything we offer for the entire football season. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. All right, it is Betting Across America. I'm Brian Noe. He's James Salinas here on VSiN. I want to ask you a fundamental betting question here, James, because I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer. I think it's more tomato-tomato, just personal preference. But we were talking about Team USA in the Olympics, and they can be as much as -350 to win gold. And some people, when it's that much juice, you kind of start scratching your neck like, oh gosh, I'm really uncomfortable with that much there. I know it ranges, and it varies based on what you're betting on specifically. But in general, where do you reach your juice breaking point where you're like, I just don't want to go over -250 or whatever your personal line happens to be?
Brian, part of it depends on how much I'm actually going to put on the game. So how much am I going to – what is my volume? How much money am I actually going to put and lay down on it? If it's a small sum, then, yeah, I'm not afraid to go and say USA Basketball, lay 350 to win the gold. I'm not doing that here. But for that scenario, it depends on how much I'm putting on the game. Now, for me, I wish I could say, all right, Brian, I'm all about bankroll management, and I'm the most disciplined sports bettor out there, and here's how to follow my lead to bet sports. I am not. Now, when it comes to how much I fire on games, my wife's not listening right now. She probably would be averse if she knew how much I'm firing on some of these games, man. But I think for me, it starts with how much I put on the game. Now, when it comes to something like, let's just start with baseball. We got a full card of baseball today. And I typically, even baseball or any kind of NFL, anything, the first thing I look at is what is the dog price? Because that's where I start. I look at the dog price. Now, because I am so frugal, I'm such a cheapskate when it comes to laying juice on most anything, and in particular for, say, said baseball. Because baseball, I mean, had the Angels, loved the Angels yesterday, thought they were going to jump all over J.A. Happ. Absolutely, they did. I had laid $1.25 on it, and not so much averse to, all right, laying a quarter on the Angels, love the spot, but then we saw what happened to the bullpen. They implode. They lose the game last night in the late innings. I think for me, when it comes to something like laying juice, in particular for baseball, probably where my point is not much beyond a quarter, maybe somewhere $1.30, $1.35. It's kind of interesting you asked that, Brian, because I've actually laid more juice on some of these player props or pitcher props per se in Major League Baseball than I do with the teams, because I trust the pitchers more than I do the teams sometimes. And so if we're talking about teams, yeah, maybe it's somewhere about $1.30. That's maybe my price point. So I'm kind of cheap. Like I said, I'm frugal when it comes to laying juice. But maybe for player props, because I trust the pitchers and or the players more, I've gone as far as $1.35, maybe even $1.40 sometimes on certain player props. So to answer your question, long-winded, I'm a cheapskate, man, when it comes to laying big prices. I'm very frugal when it comes to that. But not so much when it comes to the discipline as far as the amount that I fire on some of these things. Maybe that's something I need to maybe we should have more discussion on that, and I can be a little more disciplined as a sports bettor in that respect.
I will meet you halfway. I am a cheapskate with myself. I'll splurge on my family, my friends, but for me, like, example, last night. So I was at Circa. I did the nightcap there, and then I was going to Uber back to South Point at the end of the night, and I got on Uber, and I'm like, $65. I started walking. I just started walking. I'm like, let's cut down on the amount of this commute here. Like, so yeah, I hear you on the juice thing. No doubt about that, James. Okay, while we're talking juice and betting lines and all that good stuff, let's go back to baseball. Nationals at the Orioles. That game is at 6:35 Eastern time tonight. That's one of the games you've got your eye on. Why are you focused in on this one, James?
And here again it is. So let's talk juice here. It's $2 in favor of the Nationals on the road. And you got Scherzer on the hill. And some speculation out there, could this potentially be his last start for the Nationals? Who knows? I don't want to. We've already done enough speculation on over the last hour and a half when it comes to reading into what happens with said player. And in particular for Scherzer here, he's obviously the ace for that team. But I'm not going to lay $2, too big a price for me, because it's not all just about Scherzer. He's not going to go out there and throw a complete game no-hitter for 9 innings. We need help on the other side. But where I went here, and I like the juice on it, and the juice is sitting here plus 135 for Scherzer to go beyond 6 innings. Can he go 6 1/3? His outs right now are sitting at 18.5, and I know he works deep counts, and he strikes a lot of batters out, and that's going to lend to more deep counts. It's going to lend to a higher pitch count here. But I think for Scherzer, number one, they're playing in American League Park, so you're not going to have that concern of, well, when is he coming up in the fifth or the sixth inning based on the lineup, and they may pull a pinch hitter depending on the game. We don't have to deal with that here playing in Baltimore. You also have Baltimore out there that this team doesn't take a lot of walks. They don't strike out a ton either, but they don't take a lot of walks. This team's going to go up there and swing the bat. They do hit the contact. So for me, that's where I'm going here, because not only because it's Scherzer out there, I think he's going to go beyond 6 innings. I like the spot for him here. This is a team that is desperate, are the Nationals, to remain relevant in the NL East. They need a win desperately. Lost another game last night to the Orioles. Have not started out very well since the post-All-Star break schedule. And who gives you the best chance to win? It's going to go Scherzer. I don't think we're going to – I'm not going to worry about his length today. I think they're going to put him out there. Martinez needs a win. I think it's here. Plus 135 to go over 18.5 ounce for Max Scherzer against this Baltimore team. Absolutely. I'm all about that action right there.
I like how you think here. And, you know, you were profiting off of the Broncos way back when, right? So you've got more experience than I do in this. I've got plenty of experience too, but not like you. So I'm going to pick your brain one more time. One quickie here. How often do you look to the run line? Do you stay away when it comes to the Nationals? They're, you know, they got to win by two runs if you went that direction. Do you ever get down like that, or do you look for value elsewhere typically?
Sometimes I do, and if I do, it's going to be with the road team as opposed to a team playing at home. It just gives you maybe potentially another at-bat or another inning. If you're talking about the ninth inning, sometimes if you're that home team, you're in the eighth and you lead. Maybe you have that one-run lead there. You don't actually get to go hit in the ninth. So rarely do I do the run line, but if I do, Brian, it is going to be on the road team in that sense.
Good stuff. Okay, coming up next, Reed Kuhn. Remember John Kuhn, the Packers fullback? Kuhn. We'll have that with Reed Kuhn coming up next. Author of Fightnomics, a little analytical approach to handicapping UFC. We've got Sandhagen and Dillashaw tonight. We'll get into it. It's betting across America. Keep it locked right here on VSiN. More than the final score with One Game Parlay at BetMGM. One Game Parlay is an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. Log into BetMGM or sign up to try One Game Parlay. If you're signing up for an account, make sure to use VSiN600 and your first bet will be risk-free, up to $600. New customer offer, paid in free bets. Visit betmgm.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, and West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan. Disassociated persons, please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. And 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. In Tennessee, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 800-889-9789. Promotional offer not available in Nevada. It is Betting Across America. I'm Brian Noe. He's James Salinas here on VSiN. Want to welcome in Reed Kuhn, author of Fightnomics and a UFC handicapper, getting a set for Dillashaw, his return to the octagon tonight. It's been well over 2 years, was busted for EPO. So the long layoff, what do you think, Reed, with this long layoff and you're getting plus money with Dillashaw? Do you see value here?
Yeah, exactly. I think the long layoff might be causing some of that. Normally, Dillashaw is not going to walk into a fight as a favorite or an underdog when he's been winning title fights for so long. In fact, the only fight he lost were title fights. There were two title fights, and one of them was really questionable. I wouldn't say he lost to Dominic Cruz. He beat him up pretty bad. So this guy coming in as an underdog, first of all, is that gets your attention. Corey Sandhagen, although he might be like the next big thing at bantamweight, and he's young. His stats are ridiculous. He's very good standing and on the ground. But honestly, in the last fight, I think people are giving a little bit too much credit to the flying knee knockout of Frankie Edgar. We didn't really get to see him fight Edgar. The fight was over so quick. And while that is spectacular, I don't know if that really proves to me that he can hang in the cage for a five-rounder with someone who can also fight on two levels. So, you know, it's almost a coin flip. The numbers purely lean ever so slightly for Sandhagen here. And there is the uncertainty of the long layoff. But if you're going to give me plus 165, maybe plus 180 on Dillashaw, that's where the value is.
Rita, I got to ask you something. So what we were talking on Betting Across America on Thursday, Mike Pritchard and I were, about other ways to attack these fights. We were talking about this last week too, methods, round betting, all these different types of things we can do. And while we were discussing this on Thursday, the price on will the fight go the distance to the yes was plus 180. Now I'm looking at this here. The yes is sitting at plus 240. I'm just wondering whether it was the weigh-in. I mean, that's a pretty significant move when it comes to the juice there, if this fight will go the distance. Number one, how do you think this fight will end up? Will it go through the entirety? Because the fact that did something happen at the weigh-in that might have told people, hey, we got to bet this fight is not going the distance, because that's a pretty strong move from plus 180 to the yes to now plus 240.
Yeah, that is interesting, and I missed that. This is a difficult, tricky one to call in terms of how it ends. Both guys do have knockdown power, clearly. Both guys have racked up knockdowns. Technically, Sandhagen has done it at a higher rate per strike, but Dillashaw has been doing it longer against better opponents. So both of these guys are super dangerous, and you don't get to this level if you have bad defense. So both of them are fairly durable, and they don't get caught in bad positions very often. So I think those would be reasons for me to start leaning the over. Also, what I'm hoping for is I'm hoping to see Dillashaw bring out his wrestling. You know, he learned to be a good striker and then realized he could win fights that way, and he kind of got away from his ground game. That's still a good weapon. He still is a very seasoned grappler, and he could take it to the mat. And when you take it to the mat, that's going to stretch things out. That's how you end rounds. If you're up a little bit, you take someone down, you get in a position of control, you ride out that round. So that, if you're giving me that much plus money on the over, I would probably go that route. Then again, it is five rounds, and both guys are dangerous, so you could see a late finish. But certainly over 2 and 2.5 would be maybe a safer bet.
He's Reed Kuhn joining us here on VSiN. It's Betting Across America. I wanted to ask you, Reed, when you think about the motivation for a fighter who was popped for using EPO, and he knows if he loses this fight, what's going to be said is like, oh, look at him without the help of EPO. So that's a motivating factor here. Do you think that has an impact on this fight where Dillashaw comes out even more aggressive than he normally does? Can you see it going down like that at all?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, this guy is a fairly confident guy, and he does not want to go with back-to-back losses or come back in his big comeback. Obviously, they're promoting this a lot. I think they want to see him do well, even if he loses, like still, you know, earn some of that credibility back. So yeah, there's some pressure here, and he's the kind of guy that likes that. And when you saw him fight earlier, he really embraced the role, sometimes even as the villain, but he wanted people to know how good he was. So yeah, there's some pressure there, but unfortunately we don't really take into account the past in terms of out of the cage stuff or the long layoff, where I'm purely looking at this in terms of what are their skills? What have they done traditionally in fights? And then trying to match that up and see who has the edge. And like I said, this is very, very close on paper. Both guys skilled. And really, this is just a value play based on the price.
Reed, speaking about price, let's talk about the fight that leads up to Sandhagen and Dillashaw, and it's going to be Kyler Phillips. I'm looking at Kyler Phillips here. He's a $3 favorite. Now, it's kind of interesting. Just the last segment, we were talking, Brian and I, about the price point for us, and in particular me, how much I'm willing to put out there if it's going to be a winner. In this case, Phillips here, big favorite here, laying $3. Now, I'm pretty frugal when it comes to laying big juice, but can you convince me that Kyler Phillips is the side and I should go ahead? $3 is a fair price for Kyler Phillips in this match.
Well, if you do end up betting it, you won't be alone, because I'm backing him as well, even at that price. So again, looking at this purely numerically, I would have actually put him even higher than a 3-1 favorite here. It's a little strange for me because these guys are relatively new. They only have a few fights in the UFC, but enough to meet my threshold to run it through. And Kyler Phillips he is looking good on paper. Line these guys up side to side in terms of their striking accuracy, and he gets a huge edge. And then when you look at the ground wrestling, takedowns, ground control, he's got an edge there. So if you're telling me he's going to have the edge on two levels, I don't see a lot of ways for Paiva to actually, you know, he's going to be swimming upstream here against Phillips. So I'm willing to pay the price. If you need to parlay with that, maybe another favorite, maybe Julio Arce earlier in the fight, that could be the way to go. But yeah, I'll be backing Kyler Phillips. He's probably my biggest unit play that I'm risking here.
Reedy, I got to ask you real quickly, because I find it fascinating. Your juice breaking point, typically, where you say, minus 600, I just can't do it. Where is it where you say, I got to look for value elsewhere?
It really comes down to that individual matchup. It's not like I haven't seen value on a minus 600 or minus 700. Talk to me in a couple weeks when Amanda Nunes comes back in the cage. She's always a huge favorite, and I'm always probably going to be betting on her, all the way back to when she shocked the world and knocked out Ronda Rousey. So there are situations where you can have a very heavy favorite, and I still see value. Now, you might also go into props like inside the distance, or that particular fighter finishing the fight, because if there is an upset, it's probably going to be a stunner. And that favorite, if they are justifiable favorite, it happened last week with Islam Makhachev. He eventually got the finish. He had a couple extra rounds to do it. But yeah, there's still value to be found even when there's an overwhelming favorite.
Reed, looking at the rest of the card here, if we're talking about favorites, let's also talk about any dogs that you might be interested in. Thinking about Minner taking on Elkins here. Elkins roughly a plus 135 dog in this fight. Any interest on the plus money side in that matchup?
Barely. Yes, but barely. I definitely see the statistical advantages for Minner, but he hasn't been around as long. He hasn't faced the same competition. Elkins has been around forever. He's fought the who's who of the division and almost always as an underdog. He's one of those guys that somehow grinds it out and pulls off an upset. So yes, I do see a little bit of value on Elkins. I think to me, that also tells me I'm going to take the over here because I think this could just turn into a wrestling match. And that means maybe less danger on the feet.
Reed Kuhn joining us here, author of Fightnomics and a UFC handicapper. It is Betting Across America on VSiN. I just want the Cliff's Notes version here. Just a minute real quickly, Reed. Your model, like if you look at the hierarchy of what you typically value the most in trying to break down a fight, how does it stack up for you?
Won't go into too much detail. I will say we are including both performance variables as well as what I would call factor variables, you know, stylistic zeros and ones that I can code, you know, whether the guy has wrestling experience or jiu-jitsu or karate or taekwondo. So it's a combination of those two things. I think in generally, and I talk about this in the book, age is probably more important than you think, and reach and stance might be less important than you think. So age is something that if, especially early on a few years ago, if you had just bet on the younger guy, you probably would have made money in the longer run. But, you know, overall, I would say defense wins championships. Guys who take very little damage tend to do very well. And you got to have both levels. You got to be able to fight on both levels if that's what the matchup is going to bring to you. Otherwise, you're at risk.
Well, hey, Reed, a lot of fun, man. Thanks for popping on today. Hope you enjoyed the card tonight.
Thank you very much. See you next time.
Yeah, we'll catch you later. There he is, Reed Kuhn, author of Fightnomics and a UFC handicapper. I tell you what, it's exhilarating to win a fight, right? Like if you're betting on it, it's got to be pretty high on the list. We'll get to that coming up. And also 10 minutes from now, who finishes last in various NFL divisions? It's Betting Across America here on VSiN.